The First Test. I was in the middens of northern Australia, working as a labourer, when the forewoman approached me with two dangerous-looking men in tow. I could feel their eyes raking over me, sizing me up. They didn't get the full picture, of course. I was now the height of a thunder warrior, and relying on my gift to diminish myself in the eyes of observers. But they still saw a tall, powerful man, bald and olive-skinned, perhaps the result of genetical tinkering or hormonal manipulation from a young age.
"Azra," Winika the forewoman said, by way of greeting to me. "These fellows want to talk to you."
I set down my load, a large and heavy haulage container. I saw them register how easily I handled it. It wasn't a physical impossibility, by their understanding of such things, but it was impressive.
"One of our convoy guards fell ill last night," the man on the left said.
He was Adoram Sinan, and the bandoliers across his chest held plentiful ammunition for the large solid slug pistols riding on his hips. On his back he carried a mag-clamped chain blade, which appeared to have been adapted from a slaughterhouse tool rather than fashioned as a weapon originally. It perhaps looked even deadlier as a result. I nodded to show I'd understood his words. They were not news to me. I'd poisoned the guard in question myself.
"Means we've got an opening," said Roshan, his brother.
He wore a short-bladed power knife on his belt, and a long-barreled las weapon was slung across his shoulders.
"Winika says you're strong as three men. They're good at following instructions. Sounds like the sort of fellow we'd need."
I nodded again. "What's the pay?"
10 Imperial a day, Adoram said immediately.
"And where are we going?" I asked.
"Nadella, on the Rendian Plains," Roshan replied.
I whistled softly.
"That's a long haul."
I looked up and around, as though weighing the charms of Winika's depot. It was a refueling station and cargo point, one of the land transport hubs for this district. Everything was falling under the sway of imperial rule now, and the local governor had been appointed by the High Lords of Terra, but for many people, little had actually changed. Winika's station was dusty, dirty, smelly, ugly, and utterly without pretense. I actually liked it, in an odd way.
"Make it 12 a day, and we have a deal,"
I told the Sinan brothers. 10 was low, 12 was more reasonable, and enough of a haggle not to raise their suspicions about me, whilst not making it likely that they'd walk away.
"You like it here that much?" Roshan sneered.
"It's honest work," I replied levelly. The brothers looked at each other. Then Roshan turned and passed a small pouch of coin, a finder's fee, to Winika, and Adoram nodded to me.
"Fair play then, Azra. 12 a day. Be it Alpha Bay in a cycle, along with anything you're bringing. Space is limited, though."
"I don't have much," I told him. "I'll be there." I kept the small smile about their convoy's designated loading bay from my lips, lest it spark questions. I'd manipulated the electronic records regarding the assignations of bays to expected arrivals and departures, more for my own amusement than anything else, but it had been good practice. Winika hadn't noticed my intrusion into her systems, perhaps because I'd actually made things flow more smoothly. It was a valuable reminder how people rarely pay close attention to something if it appears to be functioning as it should. Now to test that theory in more detail. The crawlers were three massive land transports, far larger than the vehicles I had seen on the Zarinam Plateau the day my father found me. They were capable of a fair speed, too, despite their bulk, and their sheer size made them a formidable prospect for any bandits looking for easy prey. Formidable, but not impossible. That was why the Sinans had been eager to replace their man, and why I was now sitting in position in a cupola, one hand on the stock of a twin-linked heavy stubber, and looking out towards the distant, dark shape of the Sumat Hills and the setting sun as the convoy ground on.
"Got movement off to the east!"
Roshan's voice crackled into my ear over the headset. It was a primitive, short-ranged voxnet, but it served us well enough.
"Looks like 6 vehicles, kicking up enough dust to say they're in a mighty hurry."
I was on the west side of my crawler, and I did not look over my shoulder. I had a job to do, after all, which was to watch my side.
If these vehicles belong to bandits, I could do nothing until they either came to our western flank or physically boarded us. I could see, however, that my colleagues were not so disciplined. Each crawler had a defensive turret fore and aft on each side, and I was on the rear western turret of the rearmost crawler. All down the line, the other guards craned around or got up to peer into the darkening east, trying to see what was coming our way. It was a natural reaction, a human reaction, especially for mercenaries whose training had consisted simply of repeatedly not being someone who died. They were tough, there was no question about that, but not disciplined. It was a trait someone with an understanding of human nature could take advantage of. The flyers swept out of the setting sun, three of them, snub-nosed and swift, and no less deadly for the fact they were somewhat ramshackle in nature. All three together would have been no match for the sleek golden glory of my father's craft, but neither it nor he was here. The noise of the in-wing rotors keeping them aloft was largely drowned out by the racket of our crawler's engines. The guards were distracted by the very visible threat that had already been sighted in the east, and the flyers had the sun behind them. Had I not been there, our convoy would have been caught unaware and immobilized by their powerful weaponry, allowing the ground vehicles to get close and pick over our bones for the valuable cargo we carried. I had an advantage, however. I had come up with this plan, and put the bandits up to it. The flyers swept in, thinking they had a man on the inside. I'd sought out their leader, a woman named Samarat, before I'd even made it to Australa. I'd persuaded her this would work, citing the riches that could soon be hers. It turned out I could be quite convincing when I wanted to. Lies tripped from my tongue as easily as breathing. I was supposed to turn my weapon on my colleagues. Instead, I aimed for the flyers. It would have taken a near miracle for a mortal to focus on the flyers' silhouettes and pick out a wing rotor, the only target the stubber would be able to damage without concentrated fire. Any success would only come from a fluke round, fired in desperation. However, I was not a mortal, and my bursts of stubber fire found and dropped the first, the second, the third fired reflexively, before it had properly targeted the crawler, just as I blew out its wing rotor too. The rocket-propelled incendiary blew over my head and exploded somewhere beyond my crawler, throwing up a great gout of flame and a dust cloud in what had once been the bed of an ocean long, long ago. However, to any observer, it would have looked as though they'd fired a second shot, since another explosion erupted behind me. The flyer had taken me with it as it veered down towards its doom. Even prepared for it as I was, for I'd rigged the explosive when my shift had begun and I held the detonator in my hand, the concussive force still hit me harder than anything else I'd ever experienced. It barely damaged the crawler, but it knocked me clear, and even the flak jacket I wore did little to protect me from its force. My back was shredded and aflame with agony. My safety harness held, though. I swung down and collided with the crawler's exterior with a thud that knocked from my lungs what little breath remained in them, but I had no time to regain it. I unclipped the harness in one move and fell, landing on the narrow rim that sat above the tracks and which prevented the dust they kicked up from obscuring the view of the guards. Here, I nearly became undone. Such a landing would not have overly taxed me under normal circumstances. But out of breath, my head swimming with pain and the muscles of my back damaged, I nearly overbalanced. I only saved myself from falling off completely and landing in the dirt rushing by below by desperately reaching out and lodging my fingers into welding irregularities in the crawler's outer hull. I panted from the exertion, but I was still not done. The forward guard on my side of the crawler, a man called Hugrid, could look back and down for me at any moment. I was counting on him staring agape for a few moments at the ruined cupola where I had been, before he thought to see if I had been caught by my safety harness. Human nature. The time it took to comprehend an event before it could be reacted to. Hugrid was only a mortal, and so I was several steps ahead of him. I forced myself the 3 paces back to the rear end of the track's rim, at the very back of the crawler, then pulled 2 handheld mag clamps from my belt. I reached across myself with my left arm and anchored 1 clamp to the curve of the crawler's corner, then launched myself off into nothing. My back screamed in protest as I swung around in midair, for there was no purchase for my feet at the crawler's vertical rear. I was attached to it only by my left arm and the force of the clamp, but I held on for long enough to get the clamp in my right hand in place on the crawler's stern. I then disengaged my left-hand clamp with a flick of my thumb and brought it back around and out of sight of anyone who might have been peering over the side. Of course, there was still the risk someone might look over the crawler's rear to see if they could somehow catch sight of my corpse in the wake of dust kicked up by the tracks. But my plan was predicated on my colleague's focus still being on the ruined cupola and on the wreckage of the downed flyers, which would seem to them to have come so close to taking them unawares. My back was already healing. I could feel the flesh knitting back together as my father's superlative genecraft renewed itself, and the pain was fading. My movement was nearly back to normal as I clamp-walked to the access hatch. I'd watched the Cynans operating it, and one glance had been enough to memorize the access code. I punched it in, and the hatch slid open nearly soundlessly. For all the battered dustiness of the crawlers, the Cynans kept the machines on which their livelihoods depended in good condition. I swung myself inside, taking the clamps with me, and closed the hatch behind me. The cargo bay was stacked full of containers, and every single one was destined for the Imperial Palace. The Cynans hadn't checked what they were carrying, but they knew it wasn't marked with the Imperial Thunderbolts, and were wise enough not to take too close a look. Whoever was moving secret cargo in bulk to the Imperial Palace was probably not someone they wanted to antagonize, and so they would take their pay and ask no questions. Very wise of them. Few who have antagonized Constantine Valdor have survived for long afterwards. I hadn't seen the Cynans check these containers since they had not done so, and so I could not have got the access code from them. I got the code from a man named Josephan Durell, who had loaded them. He hadn't seen the problem with taking a reasonably sized bribe to give one man the access code to one container, which just showed that even the most meticulous schemes can fail thanks to human nature. I killed Durell after he'd given me the code. I can't say it was definitely swifter than the execution he would have received had Valdor found out, but the sort of nerve toxin that mimics fatal anaphylactic shock is surprisingly swift-acting, even if undoubtedly unpleasant to experience. The container opened to reveal crate after crate of ammunition. Ammunition for bolt guns, the deadly weapons of the Legiones Astartes, being manufactured far from the Imperial Palace and imported secretly, so the High Lords of Terror and other, even less trustworthy individuals, gained no insight as to the new army being mustered beneath their very feet. There was very little spare space, but just enough for me to squeeze into and lie flat. I pulled the door shut behind me with a mag clamp and manually forced the locking bolts into place. It would be a long time to remain unmoving in total darkness, but both my body and my mind would be equal to it. Not many could have done the same, but I was willing to wager there were some few who could have, with the right incentive, and it was them I was trying to emulate. I closed my eyes and let the crawler carry me towards my destination. It might seem like a pointless charade on my part. Why construct the false identity of Uzra? Why stage the attack on the convoy and Uzra's subsequent death? Why not just board the crawler unobserved in Alpha Bay once I had the access code? Surely these were merely layers of needless complexity. Cover. Getting close enough to the Cynan's operation, even just to observe them entering a security code, necessitated being seen. Even with my gift, I could be remembered. Once seen, my absence might be noted, and that would draw attention. Uzra had a complete story. It didn't matter where he came from to Winnica, but it mattered where he went. He left Winnica's employ into that of the Cynan brothers, and then he died, in a manner and location that made it very unlikely his corpse would or could have been retrieved. The Cynans were going to arrive at their destination with at least one less person than they started out with, unless they hired someone else along the way, but with the same number of people they thought they should have, based on what they understood to have happened. Winnica was not suddenly and unexpectedly missing a worker. All the numbers balanced, and so long as the numbers look right, many people will not consider that something may be amiss. I was going to find out if Constantine Valdor was one of those people.